Okay, so what I want to discuss today is actually something very closely related to what Jürgen has been telling us. And it's again quantum dots. And in this case, these are a special kind of quantum dots because they are formed in carbon nanotubes, single carbon nanotubes. And actually, what I'm going to speak here is more a question related to weather. We can use or not thermodynamics theory to describe diagrams like this for single-wall carbon nanotubes. And I will not really discuss the time, for example, of ferromagnetic needs. This is work in progress done by Sonia Koller. I will mainly discuss the work done by Leon and by Walker with unpolarized needs. But as I will show you, our formalism is very general, so we can easily include the effect of non-polarized ferromagnetics. And actually, as we shall see, also the discussion of whether or not we have to use thermodynamic theory is strongly related to the question whether there is or not an exchange field in carbon nanotubes. So in this sense, it's related also to spin. Here, what I want to say also maybe as a close-up comment to the discussion before, is that indeed in single-wall nanotubes, you can see very nicely that upon quantum gate voltage, you run from a regime of Coulomb blockade to a regime of strong tunneling. So in principle, you could really investigate these various exchange terms by doing such an experiment. This is actually an experiment done in depth. In my talk, I want really to focus, however, on this regime where we have Coulomb blockade, and basically we can flip to lowest order in the tunneling, the transport. Okay. And what I want to say here is that you see very nicely this kind of four-fold feeding, which means that we have one large Coulomb diamond, three small Coulomb diamonds, which are equal to each other, and then the things get easily repeated. So again, large, small, small, small. And we want to try to understand these kind of features. So the question that you might ask is, okay, what has been done before on correlation effects in single nanotubes? And I think that one has really to mention these very beautiful works done by Balestrin and Fischer in 97, and basically at the same time by Enter and Gogolin, where basically they were using polarization techniques to discuss strong interaction effects in single nanotubes by using ozonization. Why? Because actually these are quasi-one-dimensional systems, and it's well known that thermodynamic theory should be in one dimension. And then there are some works done later on by the Balance group, basically, where you include the effect of polarized fields. However, these are still two-terminal configurations, so no gate voltage included, basically. As far as single nanotubes in three-terminal configuration are concerned, again, works by the Balance group for polarized leads. However, they are in the regime of very good contact, so somehow in the experiment, we should thought they would be here while we are here. Okay? And as far as single nanotubes, quantum dots are concerned, so far there is only a calculation for unpolarized leads at Hartree Fock level. And they don't even calculate the dynamics, they only look to the excitation spectrum of the nanotube, which means where the single excitation lines are. And now, basically, since these works are really using bosonization, this is using Hartree Fock, one question that you might ask is, why should the mean field theory be good to describe single nanotube quantum dots? So, I mean, is there anything different, or can we do this? And my answer is the following. So that is a very beautiful experimental paper by the Delft group published last year, where they have beautiful Coulomb diamonds getting the excitation lines, and they indeed can fit very nicely the experimental data to this mean field theory. However, there are some problems if you look at the paper with a bit more care that you use unphysical parameters. So what I mean by unphysical parameters is, first of all, you have to assume that you have a very large exchange energy, which is about 2.9 million electron volt in the experiment, which is of the same order of some intrinsic parameter of the band structure of the nanotube, which is something like 11 mismatch. And the point is that this co-fold symmetry has nothing on in this experiment. So what you would conclude is that any time you see this co-fold symmetry, that this condition has to be satisfied, which is a bit strange. And also, in order to fit the experiment, basically the math that you find from the statistical calculation from the Lattice spacing turns out to be one third of the length of the tube which is measured and the physical length. And again, you can ask why. Okay. What I want to show here is the problem that we can do a calculation with the elastic pop again using bosonization. Since we want really to calculate transport in the free time configuration, we need fluid dynamics. What we do is we use basically the Liouville equation of motion for the full density matrix of leads plus nanotube. And then answer that we give, at least to the experiment, is that we also can get quantitative equivalent experiments. And if we, however, don't assume any exchange coupling and no mismatch. So the thing is that any time, basically, you have more of the general supported density, you will see this thing. And also in our calculation, then we really find the same length as for the experiment. And as I mentioned already before, this kind of approach is easily generalized to informal estimates. Okay, here I don't know how many people are familiar with nanotube, but due to the time I can really not go so much in the details. So let me point out basically the things which are relevant. So we want to have quantum dots, which means it's very important to include final size effects. So typically when you do Lattice frequency here, you assume a very narrow wire. In this case, you cannot do this. And indeed, you have to calculate basically something like a standing wave pattern for every function in the nanotube. This also means that we shall have a discrete energy spectrum, but as I said, and here, the kind of the nature of the electron correlation has not to be very important. So, usually when you hear about nanotube, you see this kind of picture, which is obtained by calculating the mass structure of the T. Actually, we have already heard about graphene 2 days ago. And you will find that single nanotube has basically two Fermi points at minus kappa zero, plus kappa zero. And because of the fact that we have this discrete energy levels, this final size system, then the discrete of the energy levels will appear. Okay? And you can basically distinguish between some left moving and right moving electrons for each of these two Fermi points. When we consider standing waves, we have to go from periodic boundary conditions basically to open boundary conditions, and you can do this, and you will find out that you can basically describe the things in terms again of left movers and right movers around a single turning point. So this is the only thing you have to remember basically. So we always speak about these left movers and right movers. And why these four electron species? Because of course we have to include the species of the here.
Why are these red levels in phase from the black levels?
Okay, so this is really to account this delta epsilon zero, which you had in the experiment, and this is simply effect of the boundary condition that you impose. So there is no reason why this kappa zero has to be a multiple of pi m divided by L. So this is what this mismatch accounts for.
And why four electrons stay again?
Yes, because I have now left movers, right movers, being on this
window. This jump. Okay.
And
OBC, is that open boundary conditions?
And okay, now how do we usually do? So basically, we want to construct a one dimensional interaction theory. So basically, what you can do is to express this electron operator for open boundary condition in terms of one-dimensional operators, and these are simply block rays which will take into account really the exact nature of the carbon in an nanotube. But I don't want to go into the details here. I want just to say that basically you do really as for standard bosonization techniques, and the one-dimensional operator has a very standard form. So basically, we can write in terms of linear combination of destruction operator in kappa space And this is a phase factor correlating basically the two transformations. Now, skipping all details, the important thing is the problem that you can derive to a single one-nanotube on Newtonian where you have basically the free part, and then you have the interacting part. And this interaction will be only considered forward interaction, so forward static interaction, which means the density density correlations. And this is something which has been discussed in the much details also in the post-IR node, seems to be appropriate if you are two non-dual languages. Okay, now let us see what are the results of this calculation. So this is what we should really focus on. Basically, because of the higher size, you have contributions which are described in these terms. So this term here, you would have also without Coulomb interaction. So this is only part of the principle which tells you that you cannot put two electrons in the same place. This delta times n, which n is the number of electrons in one R and the spin sigma, is that it's just a term that you have only if you have many mismatch. And this is a term which accounts from the Coulomb interaction in the sense of the core being lost, in the sense this is kind of a charging energy term. But you see, we did not put anything by hand, everything comes from this microscopic Hamiltonian. Finally, the excitation are these bosonic excitations, and basically we have, because we have four electron species, at the very end, it goes up in having four kind of electron of bosonic excitations. And one of the characteristics of this excitation in nanotubes is basically, this was already discussed in the papers of 97, on, let's say, the long nanotubes, you have three neutral modes and one charge mode, which simply means that you have excitation which can travel either with the unnormalized energy, which would also have without interaction, and the charge mode, which has a larger velocity, which is sensitive to the Coulomb interaction. So this is why at this time, the W kappa kappa, which is the transform of this one-dimensional interaction in space. Okay, but the important thing is basically this one, and if you wish just to visualize it, we can schematize the Hamiltonian in this way. So we have the first piece, which is due to Pauli principle, as I said, it's just shell filling. Then the second piece is due to the charging energy, so you have to pay some extra energy if you want to put electron in the dot. And then you have this collective excitation, and they are really independent of each other. Okay, so within the line, they have to behave collectively, but they are independent of each other.
Who's the guy responsible for charging? Who's the guy responsible for charging?
Okay, then, about transport, basically, we have already heard from Jürgen. So the Hamiltonian we have is very similar. So we have a source, a drain, a tunneling Hamiltonian part, and this single nanotube part. And okay, here important is what is the tunneling Hamiltonian. So basically you have a term where you destroy some, you create an electron in the tube, and you destroy an electron in the lead. And here I really put in evidence the sigma degrees of freedom, so the speed degrees of freedom, because as I said, if we include spermion and degrees, we can simply use the same Hamiltonian without problems. And basically, we can do it explicitly as Jürgen has already said, which means that we can basically have also non-polarized leads with some polarization direction for the source and for the drain. And if you choose the proper multiplication axis, which would be basically out of plane, so perpendicular to the plane formed by the two polarization directions in the source and in the drain, you can re-express this operator for the nanotube in terms of this new quantization axis. And this is really the only thing that you need. So I will not use this kind of notation, I will always use this, but at the end of the calculation, you can simply use this transformation and you will get immediately a spin sensitive contribution to that current. Okay, So now how do we solve for the transport? As I said, we didn't want to put anything by hand, so we said, okay, we also don't want to postulate master equation. You have to be very careful, as also Jürgen has pointed out. So we really start from the Liouville equation for the full density matrix PW of our system, and then we can get the reduced density matrix just by tracing out the equation for the full density matrix, trace out the lead thickness of this. Okay? And for this we make really the usual assumptions, which are simply that you treat the leads as being in equilibrium. You do second order in the perturbation HT, so we cannot describe co-family, we cannot describe combo, but as I said, at the moment, we really don't care. We are really looking to what are the physical forces which are dominant, at least in this Ricardian regime. And then here is the important point. So actually, in general, as a distinction from the case of the single level, we have a huge degeneracy of the energy levels. Because you have to imagine that, for example, we have these three species of bosonic excitation, and three of them are degenerate with each other. Moreover, you have also fermionic excitation, which also has the same energy epsilon zero. So when you derive a question of motion from the reduced density matrix, you can neglect some coherences, but for sure, you cannot neglect coherences between degenerate levels. Or at least if you do this, you have to check that it is correct to do that. Okay? So basically what then we do is that we neglect coherences between states with different electron numbers in the dot, but we keep coherences between the general states for the same number of electrons in the dot, which means that we get basically a matrix structure for the density matrix. Okay, so these blocks here represent basically the same number of electrons, and then we have within these distinct degenerate levels, and we can really get off the diagonal elements here. And I don't want to go into the details, but if you do this, you obtain an equation of motion for the density matrix, which is of the so-called block relative form, and you can calculate this block relative tensors. And what I want to point out is that the generic way how these rates for tunneling out or in the dot look like is the following. So basically, you see I have here the one-dimensional operators for the electrons in the dot, so destruction and creator. Then I have the density state in the lead, and then I have some polarization, which eventually you take into account whether I have not spin polarized lead, and then I have the effect of the quantum complex. And to be more specific, for the case of polarized lead, we can really define this polarization matrix and actually also these density states depending on the polarization that we have. Again, we don't want to go into the details, but here we clearly see that as soon as you specify P and D, you knew the effect of the thermodynamic precisely in the same way as you can see. Now, the system is a bit more complicated. We have, as I said, many levels, bosonic excitation, bosonic excitation, but the principle is the same. Now, the current then follows basically once you know these gammas, you immediately can calculate the current, for example, for the light field. What is important here that I want to emphasize is that the current depends also on the coherences. So it's not only depending on the populations, but it also depends on the coherences. And I'm stressing this very much because in the last year there has been a delay. And it is now clear that if you have polarized leads, you should keep the coherences. If not, for example, you would not get this exchange field, which was discussed before. But in general, also if you have unpolarized leads and if you have large degeneracies, you have to keep the coherences. Okay. And why you do have to do this? Simply because this is the only form which is invariant under unitary transformation, which acts on these states with which acts on this submanifold of the many degenerate states. So if you would not keep them, you would get an expression for the current which is not invariant. Okay, as I said, this I've already said before, so for unpolarized leads, it's common to make the coherences, and then you will get what I call a common master equation, a conventional master equation, which you find really almost everywhere. Okay, now the question is, okay, you did such a big fast, but it's really needed. So, when do convergences play a role? Is the conventional master pressure approach always insufficient or sometimes it works? And to understand this, you have really, for example, in our case, to understand which are the sources of the degeneracies that we have. And as I said, we have two kinds of possible degeneracies. One has nothing to do with the bosonic excitations. These are really different from the other configurations here, which are all degenerate. When you see, here simply have spin up in band L, or I have spin up in band R, and so on. And all of these are the same energies. And the important point is that at low biases, this will, I mean, only the ground state excitation for the dynamic configuration will be relevant. However, if I have large bias, then also the bosonic excitation can be relevant. So, and here I can put as many bosons as I want, okay? Because they are bosons, so in principle I can put as many as I want in this energy level. Okay, now let us go to the results. And we distinguish between the low bias regime and high bias regimes. So in the low bias regime, what we need is simply a regime where I do not have bosonic excitations. Okay? So it's the most nearby to the Fermi decay limitation. So if you find differences with Fermi decay already here, it means that the high bias will be even more. Let us put like this. And actually, now I have to really look to what this transmission coefficient, which just depends on the barrier, and this density of states, which also depends on the polarization, how they look like. And I will call generically non-polarized leads such that both the T matrix and the T matrix are diagonal. Okay? So if this is the case, then you can show that for the low bias regime, the coherence is canceled out exactly, and the GME and the CME are the same. Okay? So this is really important. If I have polarized leads, and by this I mean that either these or these are non-diagonal, then the GME is required also in the low bias regime. And here, okay, this is obvious, this is the case of permanent leads. What we did was also to consider cases in which we had unpolarized leads, but for example, it turns out that if the leads are gold contacts, for example, this is always true. But if, for example, the leads would be other nanotubes, for example, with different varieties, it can be that this thing becomes sensitive. Okay? Okay, now, as I said, I don't want to take too much of your time, so let us just look for the result. So this is the result for the conductance. So linear response regime, and here is really the bias voltage is much smaller than this bosonic excitation energy, so not the bosonic excitation are there. And you see that the conductance really has this fourfold symmetry. So this is a period and this is another period. And what is nice is that actually you see that you have the two central peaks which are larger than the two outer peaks, and this is also been seen in the experiments. And basically in our case, to get the fourfold periodicity, as I said, we have just to say that there is no band mismatch. And what it turns out is that basically this molar additional energy is just due to the charging energy, so this and this basically, while the larger one is, as you would expect for conventional quantum dot, is basically the sum of the charging energy plus the level space. In the mid-field theory, there would also be a contribution due to the exchange here. Okay? And this is why they get this strange result that the lengths, for example, of the theory and the experiments are not the same. In our case, they really get well. And in the same way, actually, you can also pick other experiments where you don't see these four poles in the theory. And here I want also to mention that we assume to have asymmetric barriers, but in the linear reference regime, you don't see the effect of the asymmetries. And you can calculate this ratio between the highest peak and the lowest peak to be about 1.4, and in the experiment they have 1.6, something like this. Okay, if you increase a bit the bias voltage, but still you are smaller than epsilon zero, then you start to see basically the effect of the asymmetry here. And finally, let us discuss the high bias regime, because this I also think is quite interesting. And let us put the thing in the following way. So we still assume unpolarized leads, and we don't find in this case coherences between fermionic and excitation, but we do have coherences between bosonic excitations. And it is no problem to calculate basically this matrix element. So if you remember, actually now I have to go up, but this is important. So why do we use the bosonization formalism, or where do we use it? So the bosonization formalism comes now in the calculation of this matrix element. So this is the matrix element of the 1D operator between the state kappa and the state n. And this you can do using bosonization techniques. You have an analytic form, both for the eigenstates and the eigenfunctions, so you can calculate this very nicely. And this is what, in fact, we use. And also you can calculate the excitation line. So this is the result that we get for the high bias regime. And here you see, again, very nicely this sort of symmetry. So the three equal diamonds and the large one. And here you also see that as a result of the fact that we have different possibilities to go in the dot depending on the number of electrons that we have, then actually these intensities are different, for example, on these two sides. Okay, because what you have to imagine, for example, is that so if I have basically no electrons in the dot, now I have four possibilities if I want to put one electron in, okay? But now if I have, so these are four ways, but now if I have one electron and I want to put an additional one, the ways are not as many as before. So, and this is why basically you get these different colors on these two different sides, okay? And now what I also wanted to show is the following. So we also need a different plot between using the generalized master equation with the coherences, or only the conventional master equation, so only the equation for the population. And to be honest, I mean, you don't see really qualitative differences, but you see quantitative differences. So, and they are most dominant basically in the regions where only one bosonic excitation or two bosonic excitation at most are excited. Okay, then last slide, just before the conclusion, so that we can go to lunch. And basically the following. So this is the case for asymmetric leads. And why did we do asymmetric leads? Okay, also because typically in the experiment you would expect to have asymmetric leads, but also because there is a very interesting prediction. It is the work by Amalia et al. It's a PRL of 2 years ago. And they did a calculation for a latitude leading with spin, and they showed that if you had large enough bias and asymmetric bias, you should find a negative differential conductance as a result of spin charge separation. So at the moment we have not found it yet, and we are looking really for that, because this would be a signature of the spin charge separation in the system. So we don't know whether we need to go to higher voltages, but if we go to higher voltages, the number of degeneracy explodes, so the problem is impossible. So really, you cannot do the calculation. Or if something else is there, because in this paper, for example, they assume to have relaxed bosonic excitation. We don't have any relaxation mechanism here. We don't see why we should have it at these temperatures, but in any case, this should not be a problem not to see these negative differential conductance features. So hope that it was interesting enough, and let me summarize what I've been telling you. And so the bosonization approach indeed gives quantitative agreement with the experiments. Of course, you would need many more experiments to make an even more stronger statement, but this is what it is until now. For example, it would be very nice to see what happens if we would have spin polarized lead and see what this would bring for the experiments again. And for these negative differential features, we are looking for them. Maybe they are there, maybe they are not, we don't know yet. And in general, it's very important to be careful. So you cannot postulate a priori and a master equation. So if you do this, you have to justify it. And in our case, it's clear for the case of polarized concept, you have to use coherences. And also for the case of the nanotubes, because of their nature, you have to be careful when you cannot use this. And thank you for your attention. And
method which Cavaliere et al. Used, how does it compare with what you are doing?
So basically, they had this latin related with spin. Mm-hmm. And they did, actually, they used this CME. Mm-hmm. But we have seen, actually, we have reproduced their calculation for the two modes limit, and we find also negative differential conductance.
So once you do CME, you say.
Hmm?
Once you do CME, you reproduce all.
Yeah, I mean, if we take their model, we find the same things. Let us put like this. Even if we don't take relaxed bosonic excitation, we also check for the bosonic excitation being relaxed, but this effect is independent whether you have relaxed or unrelaxed bosonic excitation. But apparently, now that we have these four species, the things become hugely degenerate, and maybe you have simply to go to higher energies, and this at the moment we are not. So we cannot exclude it, but we don't see the reason why it should not be there. Let us put like this.
So two GMEs we saw, are they the same? Two linear and gamma.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So actually, again, I mean, what we have here is that unless for the single member, we have really to distinguish if n is 4n, 4n plus 1, 4n plus 2, 4n plus 3. So it's much more complicated. So it's not that you can get simply a 1 to 1 is corresponding with what Rugen has. But we have done calculation for the structure of equations, and you can extract similar exchange terms as he has. But now they are also depending on the number of electrons that you have, and things like this.
So the model you're using for interactions, and do you take it to the delta function interaction, or
not necessarily?
You showed that at the beginning, but
no. For having here, mm-hmm. actually, in principle, we have taken a linearized dispersion, but it's not crucial at all. So which means delta function like interaction, because the scale of the charge modes is in many cases above here, so you don't see these features at low energies. So that really does not make sense if it's linearized or not linearized. And our theory is more general than for linearized.
Okay.
So the Holy Grail is experimental verification of the spin charge separation.
Mm-hmm.
So one method which I think has really motivated Schönenberger to start these experiments was to look just in, I think, linear transport with ferromagnetic context, right? And the other one would be then with normal contacts, but then in a strong nonlinear regime.
Mm-hmm. As I said, I mean, apparently here it's obvious that also in the linear regime, you have to be careful with using something like single particle pictures. So, and this says at the moment.
So you are not sure whether you can really see it at all. So you're doubting this Cavalier type of result.
I'm not saying anything. I'm saying that in their case, in their model, we do find it. And
yes.
In our case, since the explanation that they give applies basically one-to-one to our case, I don't see why we should not see it. So it's probably more our, fault than their theory is wrong. I think that their theory is correct, in fact. But probably the energy scales are different because of, they had the model we had. We really, to get these things, these are really, the energies of the experiments. Okay, so really, level space in 2.9 MeV and charging energy, I don't remember, 6.5 MeV and so on and so forth.
And it would be interesting if Rainer very briefly explains what you should see in this ferromagnetic contact analysis.
I mean, it depends on if you could, for instance, probe the linear conductance as a function of the angle between these, and then spin charge separation would predict that it's basically the spin accumulation is destroyed, except for the anti-dip case. So there's a very sharp dip in the linear conductance, and similar phenomena are there if you probe non-linear conductances. But our theory is really the limit where you have a very large shot. So we do not resolve the effects of the finite level space.
What we are going to do is basically, I don't know how long will it take to compare our theory with the prediction of Julian, because at the very end, the only thing you care about is the angular dependence.
Right, but also I think if you just have this normal exchange effect, there's a very similar contribution. The Coulomb blockade has a very similar effect on the angular magnetic resistance than the spin charge separation. So how are you going to?
Of course, in practice this is an issue. I mean, I would say you go onto the Coulomb blockade peak, because this you can already see in charge time. So if you're on the Coulomb blockade peak and then probe spin transfer, then I think it's always something you have to keep in mind when doing this language of business. You should quench Coulomb blockade because it's also a competing shock.
Right. Okay, but here, I mean, we do have the effect of spin charge separation in the Coulomb blockade regime. So, I mean, because the Coulomb blockade is just the zero mode of this one-dimensional interrupting system after all. So we are not going to see power loss, okay? Because then for that you will need this long length limit, but we don't care. I mean, we're looking for something else. So
yeah, but still also, again, that one. Also, in at least this single particle type of exchange also sort of destroys your spin accumulation, also in the Coulomb blockade, in the
Of course, yeah. That's really responsible.
But also non-interacting, I guess it's then just...
But then it's more gradually.
So your prediction would be very steep also. Right. Then.
Goes to basically infinitely steep at low enough scales.
A semantic question. What does it mean, spinful?
it's a nice question. It's simply because, you know, theory likes to have models which are really simple. So in the first theoretical development of the Laplacian theory, people forgot completely about the spinning wheel theory.
Uh-huh.
And then it's by default when you speak about Laplacian theory without spin. But now people are starting to
realize spin and good. It means spin and good.
So it's opposite to spin less.
Okay, I think it's time for lunch now.